So in this video, I would like to start up by self-disclosing and sharing with you a little bit of myself, if that's okay. Not just because I like telling about myself, like Karen in that last video, but we self-disclose in our conversations, our interactions with other people, to kind of go first. Right, so say, for example, in a coaching relationship, we might be able to sense, especially in a first meet or a second meet, that a client's not feeling too comfortable with us, they're not totally confident that we can actually be trusted just yet with all their deepest, darkest secrets and their beliefs and their worldviews and all that kind of thing. So self-disclosure is a fantastic tool that we can use, and it's not a skill, it's nothing like that, it's actually just about us being truthful about our own story. Not about telling everything without boundaries, all right, but sometimes sharing just little snippets of ourselves, kind of like this. Well, I'll give you a little bit of me, now I'm going to invite you to give me a little bit of you. Alright, and it's kind of like this this dance that we kind of go through as coaches. A little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. I'll give you a little bit of me, then you give me a little bit of you. And this is kind of how trust is developed over time, isn't it? Well, I tell you this because, and I introduce you to the idea of self-disclosure. Now, back when I was young, I had a funny sort of relationship with my dad. I probably quite boldly say that my dad wasn't a particularly strong communicator, which was quite ironic because he spent much of the latter stages of his life in sales. So he didn't have a problem selling things to people, right? But in terms of communicating well in the family home, and in terms of just in day-to-day relationships, he possibly wasn't the most of relational people. He never really had too many people in his life at any given moment in time. Now, there was obviously reasons for this, reasons that I am still not aware of. You know, I might find out someday if we ever get to this level and depth of conversation. But back when I was young, my dad used to torment me, all right? He used to do things like, he used to squeeze on his finger, all right? He used to squeeze on his finger right in, and it's a pressure point. And if you do this really hard, it sends excruciating amounts of pain right up your arm. Well, my dad, the relationship I had with my dad was quite a funny one. He used to find inflicting pain on his son a funny thing, and to be honest with you, I kind of liked it as well until things got too far, and then something that was funny became unfunny pretty much right away. But the theme of my childhood, in terms of the relationship with my dad was a very, very overpowering kind of man. And obviously there was not any malintent here, but he would pin me to the floor, overpower me physically. And sometimes if I was speaking, he would, bah, 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 bah. You know, have you ever seen someone who does that? When you start speaking, then they cut in and go, bah, 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 bah. Now he thought that was funny, but he used to send me around the twist, getting interrupted. All right, and sometimes if I was speaking to friends or family or anyone, all right, he would come in and then just cut me off and then just, you know, dominate the conversation. And I learned from a very, very young age that I absolutely hate being interrupted. And I'm guessing that in latter years, this really spurred me on to become quite a strong communicator. I mean, look at what I'm doing today, right? I communicate to the masses, you know, on a global scale, to a global audience. And I do so, and I guess one of the fantastic things about video is I can say whatever I want to say without any interruption whatsoever. It's great, and I love this, and this just feels so natural for me. But I'm guessing that how we communicate, you know, as we go through life, is sometimes always going to be, you know, reflective or as a result of kind of how we were communicated with back when we were young. All right, remember, we all develop these limiting beliefs about ourselves back in the early stages of our life, which are just the stories that we tell ourselves in response to the interactions and the communications that we have with other people. So, over the last decade, as I've really started working with people in a therapeutic context, in a coaching context, in a helping context, and even in a teaching context, I've really had to refrain myself at times and hold myself back and contain myself from speaking out of turn, all right? Because I understand that when I am not controlling and mastering my conversations, my interacting, my communicating with other people, if I speak out of turn, if I am not responding or attending people, I can end up damaging and tearing down trust before it's even had an opportunity to start getting built up. All right, so we can damage and kill relationships sometimes before they even get started if we're not aware of where other people are at. So I want to introduce you to an interesting idea in this video from a gentleman, this fine-looking man behind me right here, a gentleman named Mr. Thomas Gordon. Now, he wrote a book around about maybe 30 or 40 years ago called Parenting or Parent Effectiveness Training, all right? So he defined this idea as the 12 roadblocks to effective communication. Now, the book that he wrote was geared towards parents communicating and interacting more effectively with their children. Now, the reason I want to build this idea into the course is because as human beings, we tend to develop the communication styles and habits that we do back when we're young in response to how our parents interact with us. All right, so now you have some context. All right, I've learned to be quite a strong communicator over the years, but I had to learn to be quite a strong communicator so that I could be heard back when I was young, sometimes by an extremely overpowering father. All right, it's funny how our past sometimes shapes our present in the direction that we take in life. All right, so do I thank my dad for his overpowering nature? Absolutely, because it's molded and shaped me into the man that I am today. Well, part of the man that I am today, anyway. So let's have a look at these roadblocks to healthy and effective communications. Now, it's important that we are mindful and understand these as life coaches, all right? Because if we communicate in any of those ways, all right, we can end up unknowingly triggering something in our clients that can end up doing more damage than good, all right? People, more often than not, respond more to their perception of reality than reality itself. So sometimes if a person has had a negative experience in the past, or what they've perceived to be a negative experience in the past, and then we communicate in a way that just reminds them of that, we can draw hurts from the past right into the present, and this can obviously cause all sorts of other issues for them. So let's have a look at these. Ordering, directing, commanding. Now, this is kind of more of an authoritative communication style, isn't it? If you've ever studied leadership theory, if you've ever studied MPO, you know, managing organizations and people, one of the core leadership styles that's often taught is based upon the ideologies of a gentleman named Machiavelli, who wrote a book called The Prince. This book, The Prince, is very much what is taught and explored and looked upon in when people are studying politics, or obviously leadership and management, when they're looking at the leadership styles and all this kind of thing. So this guy Machiavelli, in his book called The Prince, looked at what an effective leader should be and how an effective leader should and must communicate. His way of thinking and looking at life was that a leader is better to be feared than loved. When people fear you, they will toe the line and they will fall into line and all that kind of stuff, which is what a good king or a prince must be. And then some people who've perhaps been on the receiving end of this authoritarian approach of leadership or parenting then go on to act and behave exactly the same way with their children. And guess what? When we are being ordered around, when we are being directed and commanded and told what to do, this really does promote a responsibility, doesn't it? Granted, some parents might think that they're doing their kids a good turn by ordering, by commanding, by directing, by telling them what to do. But I guess this is not really encouraging little people to exercise their own minds and become decisive in their own right, exercise their ability to make their own decisions. All right, so as coaches, if there's any part of our being, any part of our approach to communicating that is in any way authoritative, orders or directs or commands, it might even just be the tone that we take, our posture, our body movements. It might not be the case that we are intending to order or direct or command, but sometimes people will just perceive that we are because of an experience they have in the past. And this can become a real roadblock to healthy communication. Remember, it's a two-way street, isn't it? There's one thing, what we say and how we say what we say, and then there's something else, how we're received. So sometimes our words could be completely overlooked, our intentions could be completely overlooked if our body language, our posture is perceived as being ordering or directing or commanding by nature. And this is something that I've had to really work on over the years, and it's something that I'm I still haven't fully on top off, all right? I do tend to take a bit of an authoritative style sometimes in my communications. Warning, threatening, admonishing, all right? This is a tough one, isn't it? All right, have you ever found yourself getting frustrated with someone? You know when you want the best for someone, or you want the best for your children, or your husband, your wife, your friends, your parents? Sometimes we want more for other people than what they want for themselves. Sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes we're just impatient. Sometimes we become impatient because people don't, you know, pick things up. They aren't as quick on the intake as what we would like them to be. And I've also found myself falling into this trap as a coach, especially in my early days. There was a guy I worked with once. Lovely guy. All right. Was he open? Yes. Was he receptive? Well, as things transpired, yes, he was receptive, but he just wasn't as receptive as what I wanted him to be in the time frames that I kind of set upon him. All right. So what I'm saying is, in the past, it's not that I've ever, you know, become threatening or warning or anything like this, but, you know, right back when I started coaching, when clients perhaps wouldn't grasp the ideas that I was communicating, I would get frustrated. And I'm just being completely honest with you here, all right? Because there's a pretty good chance that you're going to find yourself, you know, experiencing the same level of frustration. People, you know, absorb and take in ideas, information, and learn and grow at different paces, all right? If we are ever perceived to, you know, be conducting ourselves in this way, people will shut down and they will completely, you know, close off to us. So it's a roadblock to healthy communication. Moralizing, preaching, should do's and ought to's. I have found this one of the most patronizing communication styles in the world, all right? I think of the experience that I've had of Christianity and my experience in the church, I'm not saying it was bad, it wasn't, you know, I've learned some fantastic lessons along the way, just certain individuals, that's all, you know. It was possibly, for me, certain individuals that, you know, kind of I've responded to over the years, people who just think they have all the answers. You know, if you've ever had a parent or a teacher or an elder or a grandmother or a minister or a pastor or a preacher or something like that who starts wagging their little wizard finger at you, you should know better. You know, I've trained you better than this. I raised you better than this. You should be ashamed of yourself. You're a disappointment to me. You know, that kind of stuff where people take that kind of moral high ground and look down on other people. Well, all right, you might be asking, so how is this relevant to life coaching? Well, I have known many people over the years to fall into the significance trap, what I shared in that last core value section. You know the significance trap? Where sometimes, because we've taken a few courses, we've read a few books, we are a little bit self-aware, we know of ourselves in some aspects of life, and we take this high ground, kind of like, you know, I'm a guru of life, you know, I'm an expert of life. You know, it's kind of like I am on this journey, all right? There's not many other people in the world who have progressed in life to the degree and to the depths of which I have progressed. You know, I know quite a lot, perhaps even significantly more than others, and I take the moral high ground, and I might even start getting a little bit preachy, teachy at you. And I don't care what you know or don't know, all right? I just want to preach you, and I want to teach you, and I just want you to know that I know more than you. Whether I do or whether I don't is irrelevant. And that might seem a little bit hard, but how many people do you know who take this ground in life, right? Who would rather try to teach you than understand you? You know, I've had to literally walk away from some friendships that I've had, some people that I really cared about, because the conversations and the relationships became dishonouring. They became completely disrespectful. You know, had a man, a relationship who, you know, a really important relationship in my life around about 11, 12 years ago. And this man was a really significant man at that stage of my life back then. He would teach me, he would lead me into insights, help me understand things of myself that I never knew. But the relationship never moved beyond student-teacher, if that made sense. 12 years on, I'm speaking to the same guy saying, listen, can our relationship evolve, please? You know, can you stop trying to teach me? Can you stop trying to advise me? I'm finding it quite patronizing. I don't need you to teach me. Can we just connect meaningfully instead? But yet some people won't change because, you know, they're off this place of moral high ground. I am older than you, therefore that means that I'm perhaps more experienced than you. I know more than you. I understand more than you. I am perhaps even better than you. What I'm saying is it's no such thing as a bad intention, right? Let's give people the benefit of the doubt. But from our own perspective, right, we can't control how other people are towards us, but we can control how we react and respond towards them. So let us not be for other people the kind of people that we wouldn't want to have for us. All right, so moralizing, preaching, should do's and ought to's. You ought to know better. You should be doing this. And who are we to say? Who made us the experts of other people's lives? That's right, we ain't. Advising, giving solutions, suggestions. Now, especially in a coaching context or any professional helping context, this is completely inappropriate. All right, the only advice that I could give you in life right now would be based upon what I would do if I was in the same or a similar situation. But what I should do most certainly is not what you should do. All advice is always going to be subjective. There's no advice that I could give you would ever be objective, right? Advice don't operate like that, right? My advice, the advice that I offer, if I'm giving, you know, solutions or making suggestions, can only ever be based upon my experience. Now, granted, throughout this course, I've made some suggestions, but it would be completely ignorant for me to say, this is how you must life coach. Here is a process that you must stick to. There are 5 steps. This is how you get it right. Now, granted, many people in their thinking look for the 5 master steps or the 7 master stages. Why? Because many people are lazy in the thinking. Many people would rather wait to be told what to do and given the complete solution than figure things out for themselves. And when it comes to working with people in life, guess what? We are a global population of 6.7 or 6.8 billion people. Every single person is different. It is completely inappropriate for us to apply the same steps or stages of process that we use in one person with another. Why? Because everyone's at different levels and stages of life. Advising, giving solutions, suggestions, that is not our role as life coaches. Our role is to simply understand where people are at by, you know, giving them time and space to better understand and make sense of their own lives, to figure out what they want, and then ultimately see for themselves the steps that they need to take to get from where they're at to where they want to be. Towards the end of this section, I'll show you and share with you, is a six-stage coaching process, if you like. It's not a process, it's just more of a framework, all right, where you can literally help people have their breakthroughs, experience a complete breakthrough, solve their own problems in one conversation. Might take you half an hour. All right, coaching can be as powerful as this when we understand frameworks and principles. Processes are going to differ for different people based on their needs. All right, but frameworks is kind of where it's at. All right, and we can't give advice based on frameworks, right? Advising, giving solutions, making suggestions. Nah. It's up to other people to work it for themselves and make decisions about what they need to be doing next. All right, this is where the empowerment comes through. Our clients taking responsibility for themselves. If we are advising, giving solutions, suggestions, this is us taking responsibility for them. Are you with me? It's not going to serve our clients if we do this. Using logic, arguing, or over-intellectualizing life. Right, I'm going to come back to the American Board of Psychiatry again, right, and I'm going to wag my little wizard finger at you guys for over-intellectualizing the human experience. Look at how much damage you've done to the world, my friends. Get your blooming heads out of the textbooks and look at where people are at. Do you know how many new conditions are made up and invented every single year? Do you know how many conditions become obsolete every single year? Do you know the word schizophrenic, right? Now, I literally learned this just a couple of years ago. When I was studying the social sciences, we had one of the, obviously, social sciences is psychology. And back when I was, you know, still very much in the early stages of my journey of learning, I was presented with, you know, schizophrenia. This was like a 1 week major topic, schizophrenia, right? Looking all about schizophrenia. And I discovered around about, it was about 3 weeks later, that the term schizophrenia is no longer used in professional circles. Instead, it's been replaced by around about five or six other conditions. All right, it's been superseded, right? Believe it or not. So go tell that to all the people who were, you know, who were told they were schizophrenic back in the 60s, 70s, and the 80s. Poor buggers, all right? They, you know, doctors, these professional helpers said, you are schizophrenic, that's who you are, you know, come and undergo our treatment. And these guys said, oh my goodness, I'm a broken human being, I'm a schizophrenic, oh my goodness. And now the many of the helping professionals are saying it didn't even exist. It was something else instead. Oh my goodness. How, as human beings, we can get things so wrong sometimes when we over-intellectualize the human experience, all right? You know what there is? In the world right now, there's just 6.7 or 6.8 billion different ways of doing life. There's 6.7 or 6.8 billion different ways of learning and receiving and retaining information and interpreting the world. All right, when one person says, you know, my way is the normal way, then what that therefore then means is that every other way is the incorrect way. We sometimes look at academia and information and we say, oh, how am I going to make sense of life? How am I going to make sense of my world in this really academic way? And life isn't academic. Life isn't a scholarship. It's right here, right now. Have you ever had a conversation with someone and they're sharing with you their experience, they're starting to open up, and then you say, but I disagree, but that's not right. All right, and then you get into a disagreement or a head debate with someone. Now, that might be fine if you're a pimply-faced student in university or college who doesn't know any better, all right? But if you're a fully grown adult, then what I'm going to boldly suggest here is that disagreeing and using logic with people and, you know, when communicating is completely heartless and it is going to tear down trust, right? I've never known two people to have an argument where at the end of the argument, one person says, oh, you know what? I'm so exhausted from this argument. You've argued me into seeing things your way. What happens when one person says, you're wrong? How about you're having an opinion about what I'm saying right now? Then I just say to you, you're wrong. What's going to happen? You're going to get your backup, aren't you? And if you have got your backup towards something that I've said throughout this course so far, it's only because of an idea that you've embraced from someone else at some point in the past, all right? And how it is that we grow in life is when we look at new ideas, new information from alternative perspectives that generally just differ from our own. It's fine using argue, it's fine using logic, it's fine even arguing sometimes, right? But certainly not in the context of a helping relationship. Someone comes to us and says, this is how I see things. We don't say, you're wrong, you're incorrect. We're completely undermining and belittling another person's ability to make sense of their world. It's completely disrespectful and a fantastic way of tearing down trust.